You're listening to Refinitiv LPC's Lender Spotlight Series with Iwana Barza, Head of Market Analysis.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in today. It's my pleasure to host my colleagues at Sherman & Sterling for a discussion on a few key areas in direct lending and the syndicated loan market. To kick it off, I'm going to turn it over to Tomáš Kulavík, who will moderate the discussion. Tomáš is a partner at Sherman & Sterling. He focuses his practice on leverage finance. Now, this includes acquisition financings, asset-based lending, and refinancings, both in the syndicated world, but also in the direct lending space. Tomáš, over to you.
Thank you very much. So first of all, I would like to thank the Refinitiv LPC team for giving us an opportunity to participate and really host a panel on direct lending and COVID-19 that we did in April. And we, of course, look forward to participating again and hosting another panel in September. So, we at Sherman & Sterling are somewhat uniquely situated in that we can really offer a perspective on, from both the lender and the borrower side, and that's what we would like to do today. I'm joined today by two of my partners, and I will let them introduce themselves when they respond to the first question of the two questions that I have for them today. So the first question I'd like to ask is really kind of general. What is your assessment of the current state of the market? What trends have you been seeing in the past, 6 to 12 months, and where do you see things going? So Heather, over to you.
Sure. Thank you, Tomáš. So I'm Heather Waters-Borthwick, and I'm a partner here in the bank finance group. I primarily represent financial institutions, commercial and investment banks, and direct lenders in a broad range of financing matters, really with a focus on syndicated loans, often with a direct lending component these days. So I would say that over the past 12 months, kind of after initial COVID and sort of the initial wave of restructurings and liquidity transactions, when the M&A market came back in the fall, obviously the new issue in our space, correspondingly increased along with it. That activity, in my experience, has continued apace through the first 6 months of this year. And last week was one of the kind of like the biggest weeks of the year so far. And just a couple of very large term loans were allocated and reverse flexed. So the market's very strong, and we see it continuing to be strong in the near future.
And Heather, what are you seeing in terms of the terms that the lenders are agreeing to these days?
I would say that they are aggressive, and the sponsors in the market space have it's competitive to allocate the capital, and the sponsors have certainly been at an advantage, given the competitiveness in the marketplace, for the paper.
Okay, thank you. So Gus, maybe you could tell us a little bit from the borrower perspective where things have been.
Sure. So my name is Gus Atiyah. I'm a partner on the finance team at Sherman & Sterling. I've been probably doing this for more than I care to admit on a public podcast, but probably for over two decades at this point, more than two decades. And I focus my practice primarily on representing private equity sponsors, direct lenders, corporates, family offices, and hedge funds, primarily either doing borrower side type financings or balance sheet type investing on the debt side. In terms of the question, I think given given the trends in the last 6 to 12 months, I would say that there's a tremendous amount of liquidity out in the marketplace. There's a lot of capital that's been formed, particularly in the direct, you know, focusing on what we call direct lending, but frankly, the private capital, which is probably a broader term and more apt for the current set of circumstances. I think it's safe to say that there's a lot of capital that has formed and ready to deploy. And the market's pretty wide open, and all sorts of transactions are getting done, whether large cap, mid cap. And I would say that the competitiveness at which deals are getting done is pretty high. So from the borrower perspective, depending on the circumstances from the either private equity or even the corporate, the competitiveness is such that I think it's fairly easy to drive good terms and still maintain good execution. And I think it's a great time to be a borrower with a good business that needs to leverage itself for whatever purpose.
Okay. No, that's very, very helpful perspective. And again, you know, in terms of kind of what you've been seeing in terms of, you know, actual terms, you know, my experience has been personally that we are seeing things that we didn't even see, you know, before COVID. Is that something that you've observed as well?
Yes, I don't think COVID, if anything, in certain segments of the market, I would say that COVID has been an accelerant, not a retardant, on both the terms that one is able to get, as well as even the headline economics. So if you separate the two, you have sort of headline economics in terms of the pricing of the debt and other provisions that might impact pricing, where given the amount of capital that's chasing opportunities, and one can say that this is true both on the debt side and the equity side, and you see it in valuations, that I think the cost of debt capital is very competitive and coming down, given how much formation there is around it and how people are pursuing those sorts of transactions. And then in terms of terms, I think you're seeing a lot of flexibility because of the competitiveness. But the thing that really drives competitiveness on the term side and also on the headline economics, but even more so on the term side, is, are people willing to invest the time and energy to run processes that are competitive and really push people, or are people going with a bilateral or an exclusive and really focusing on speed of execution? But that's more about the tactic. And for some borrowers, speed is really what matters, and they may have a longstanding relationship. They'll be able to push on headline economics. But if they're going with an exclusive debt provider and not doing a competitive tree process, they're likely going to get decent terms, but they're not going to get best in class on every single category, as opposed to folks that are willing to invest the time and energy to run a real tree process and really push folks. And that just all depends on what the objectives and goals are of a particular borrower or PE sponsor.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And, you know, since you mentioned, you know, tree processes, and I think that's kind of a nice segue into the second question. You know, one thing that we have been observing in the market, you know, for the past probably, you know, 2-3 years, but that has really, I think, accelerated in the past maybe 12 months or so, is the, you know, convergence of terms that, you know, borrowers can obtain in and that lenders are comfortable, you know, underwriting or providing, you know, in the syndicated market and the direct lending market. You know, those terms seem to be really converging. So Heather, I would be interested to hear your perspective on what you have seen, you know, from the lender perspective about this, you know, convergence.
Sure. So you kept carrying on a little bit with Gus's thought on, you know, on the process and the process driving terms, you know, the LBO activity and, you know, over the last, you know, call it 6 months, has been very robust, and nearly all of the processes that that I've been involved in have been quite competitive with multiple trees. Often a first lien, second lien. We've been seeing a number of different structures in the group, some including an equity piece and, as well as a bond. So within the context of those transactions, we're also often now seeing pretty regularly a direct lending piece. So some component of either a strip of the first lien and second lien being kind of pre-allocated, or an entire bought second lien, or at least a partially bought second lien. And so on those facilities where you have a direct lender coming in to take either all or to be a significant anchor order on a second lien, they can drive some tightening on certain terms. But by and large, we've really seen them, kind of jump in and participate in the full syndicated loan market, on the terms that we're seeing, which, as Tomas, you mentioned, it's they're as kind of robust and aggressive as they ever were pre-COVID. So, if not more so in some instances, given just the level of competition in the marketplace.
Yeah, and that's consistent with what I have seen also, in the large cap space where, the direct lenders are really comfortable, there may be, two or three things that they may care more about than the syndicated lenders. But other than that, they really seem to be very comfortable, underwriting those, really, providing capital on the same terms as those large syndicated deals. Gus, you do a lot of work in the middle market space, it would be interesting to hear your perspective, whether you're also observing this convergence, outside of the large cap space.
So the answer is yes and sort of. I think, the mid-market is such a widely defined term. So we recently worked on a transaction where the financing was probably $600 or $700 million for a $1 billion+ equity value take private, and I think people were considering that to be mid market, maybe upper mid market. So it's a pretty broad, array. But I would say you can characterize two types of transactions in the middle market, and probably more if you really dig into the detail, but call it upper middle market, you do see a convergence of PE sponsors looking at both a syndicated solution and a direct or private capital solution. You have, with certain large asset managers, the ability to provide both sorts of solutions, both what they think of as a capital market solution, which competes, I think, head on with what some of the money center banks are providing, as well as a more sort of directly placed solution. The convergence that we see is in the upper middle market with PE sponsors. They are running blended trees. I mean, they are running trees where you have maybe 3-4 banks that are competing with a syndicated solution and a couple of the larger, more established direct lenders that are competing head on. And the clients are literally looking at grids that put out these terms side by side with the banks and the direct lenders and doing a pro-con assessment on a lot of different terms. Where the issue really, I think where the rubber meets the road, is that the direct lenders can skip syndication and can provide a certainty on execution and, frankly, certainty on terms, but it permits the sponsor will have to make a calculated assessment that speed and certainty is going to outweigh maximum market execution. While on the syndicated side, you'll see sometimes more competitive terms, but the what we call the flex terms in the fee letter, which, depending on the practitioners listening to this, will appreciate or not. But the terms in the fee letter that permit the syndicated providers of debt to really modify it fairly extensively, you'll have in a situation where you have this convergence, and and you have five or six debt providers, you know, a couple privates and a couple syndicateds. On the fee letters for the syndicated, the fee letter can go on for 6-7 pages of flex items that can change both economics and terms, EBITDA addbacks, et cetera, while the one for the private capital is, you know, 3 pages, and it just really contains the fee terms, and there's certainty to execution. So there's a balance to be made there. And then the other consideration, which is a more nuanced and subtle one, is I think that on the private side, more leverage can sometimes be provided against EBITDA, but probably less flexibility around some of the add backs, in that there's going to be more hardwired percentages on synergy add backs and items like that. But at the same time, you might be able to get, from a PE sponsor perspective, more of a unitranche type solution, where you're going to get a little more leverage, maybe 3/4 of a turn or a turn, versus a pure syndicated. So if you're riding between a deal that's at 5 3/4 and 6.5, that extra 3/4 of a turn in something that's very competitive might make the difference between grabbing the asset and not grabbing the asset. And so there are some differences there. I think with some of the private capital providers, there's still an insistence on sometimes getting a financial covenant, a maintenance covenant. But frankly, given the competitiveness and the convergence, despite the fact for needing a financial maintenance covenant, the latitude that can be built in versus the model can still give clients on the PE side or the borrower side the comfort to proceed with private capital, even though they have a financial maintenance covenant, versus a syndicated solution that could be cov light, because you're seeing the spreads just blow out on this, the cushion to the model plus the add backs. But that's sort of the tension around the convergence. It's not a pure head-to-head, but the two areas that I think that differ, where one could solve around, is the EBITDA add backs, where you're not just relying on kind of the flex and the market. You have to make a decision that you're okay with certain caps and certain thresholds. And then the cushion to the model with the financial covenant. But other than that, on other terms, like flexibility on ratio debt, covenant flexibility, things like that, that goes head to head. And so what we're seeing and what I'm seeing is there's definitely a real competitive value proposition for direct lenders to come in the upper mid market and take market share increasingly from the syndicated solution, particularly if it's a situation that where that little bit of extra financing can allow the PE sponsor in a competitive situation to offer more. And if it's a situation where you can offer certainty of execution and people are willing to take that certainty over letting the market sort of, you know, ride with the chips.
Yeah, thank you guys. That was very, very helpful and very thoughtful. So I think, you know, I think that unfortunately our time is up. So I'd like to take, you know, take this opportunity to really thank Heather and Gus for a really great panel, you know, and very, you know, very thoughtful, very useful perspectives. And, you know, obviously we hope that, you know, our listeners also found the panel informative and were able to learn something. And we are, of course, you know, open to any questions. If, you know, if there are any follow-ups or maybe something we said, you know, sounded interesting, or maybe, you know, just anything really, feel free to reach out to us. You know, we're happy to chat at any time. And of course, you know, as I mentioned before, we will be hosting another conference in September, and we also look forward to connecting at the fall conference. So thank you very much again.
Tomas, thank you so much. And Heather and Gus, this has been a fantastic discussion. And I want to join you in thanking our audience for tuning in. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We want to wish you a wonderful summer and hope that you join us virtually in September for our next Loans Conference. And in the meantime, take care, stay safe, and please reach out to us with any questions.
This has been Refinitiv LPC's Lender Spotlight Series. For more information, email us at lpc.info@refinitiv.com.